Okay, Numbers 21. We find here that they run into another conflict. Verse number 1, and when King Arad, the Canaanite, which dwelt in the south, heard tell that Israel came by the way of spies, then he fought against Israel and took them, some of them, prisoners. Okay, so you, at the bottom of Israel, so you look at your little map there at the bottom. All right, so way down at the bottom near Kadesh Barnea, that's the bottom of Israel there. And that's the area where this Canaanite king Arad was. And he didn't like the fact that some years earlier they had sent spies in there. And he knew they were in the area. So he said, we're going to get rid of these people here. So he's going to give them a hard time. And Israel, verse 2, Israel vowed a vow unto the Lord and said, if thou wilt indeed deliver this people into my hand, then I will utterly destroy their cities. The Lord hearkened to the voice of Israel and delivered up the Canaanites, and they utterly destroyed them and their cities, and called the name of the place Hormah. All right, so God here gave them victory, and they were able to defeat the Canaanites, and God gave them his blessing there. Now, so that's a big blessing to start out with. So those are the first three verses of the chapter. Then verse 4, it says, and they journeyed from Mount Hor by the way of the Red Sea and compassed the land of Edom. All right, now, take a look at your map. They were at Kadesh Barnea, and they went down toward the Red Sea. So you, these lines that are on your map actually are the trail, well, sort of. Right. So they follow it down toward the Red Sea. And it's kind of a big V-shaped here. All right? So they went down there, and then we're going up back up the other side to go around the land of Edom. All right? The Edomites said, no, you can't come into our land. So they're going around the land of Edom. So they go down toward the Red Sea and then back up on the other side of the mountain range there. So there's a mountain range in the middle that you can kind of see that comes down there right below. Right below the Dead Sea and comes down that direction. So they're going around that mountain range, coming up the other side, and they're going up the other side now. Okay? Now follow that on your map? All right. Sorry, the map, it really needs to be a big one. I wish I had a big map that I should have one, you know, a big tall one, but I've not made any maps like that before, so I have to see what I can do. And they went down there and they journeyed around there. They're going around Edom, and the soul of the people was much discouraged because of the way. All right, so you can imagine that long trip. It was so short to just go from there right into Canaan, but they wouldn't let them in that way, and so they had to go around Edom. And so there's a long way down there through the desert, around the mountains, and up the other side. None of this is on roads that are nice and smooth and traveling like this. It's rough traveling. Not an easy place. The people are discouraged because of the way. And, of course, as usual, the people spake against God and against Moses. Wherefore have you brought us up out of Egypt to die in the wilderness? That was their favorite line. You know, why couldn't we stay in Egypt? You brought us up here to die in the wilderness. There's no bread, for there is no bread, neither is there any water, and we loathe this light bread. All right, now what light bread were they talking about? The manna. They said, we're sick of this manna. And it's interesting, the word light there, the Hebrew word means worthless, miserable, or unappetizing. We don't like this stuff. We're tired of the old manna. Now, the manna was perfectly suitable for them. It was a balanced food. It met all their needs. God provided for them, and it kept them in good health for 40 years, but they didn't like it. They were weary of it. And there's not very many foods like that today. They say that millet is a very balanced food. Millet's teeny tiny. Maybe millet was similar to this stuff. I don't know.
Good for budgies.
Yeah, well, maybe good for budgies, but it's good for you, too, if you can get some that doesn't have the holes on it. Anyway, so they don't like this unappetizing food. And to punish their complaining, God's going to send them some fiery snakes. Verse number 6. And the Lord sent fiery serpents among the people, and they bit the people, and much people of Israel died. Now, I've always been curious, why were they called fiery snakes? They weren't flaming. But commentators say that it was probably because The bite stung like fire when they got bit. Well, even if it did sting, that was the end of them because it was deadly. It wasn't just a painful bite. It was a deadly bite. And so they were getting bit by these snakes, and the people were dying, and this plague breaks out among the rebels, and they realize, hey, we're in big trouble. And they hadn't learned all those times. For 40 years, they've done this over and over again. They've complained. God punishes them, and a bunch of them die off, and then they get it right. But the same thing happens here. And so they came to Moses in verse 7 and said, "We have sinned and have spoken against the Lord and against thee. Pray unto the Lord that he may take away the serpents from us." And Moses prayed for the people. All right, so in times of hardship, you know, many times God sends troubles our way. It may be big problems, it may be little problems, it may be frustrations. But often, God allows those kind of things because he wants us to pray. He wants us to trust him. And we so often don't. And we just do things our way, and we complain and grumble, and God says, "I want you to trust me." And so this plague breaks out among them. They got all these snakes, and with the snakes and the people dying, they cry out to Moses. Verse number 8, "And the Lord said unto Moses, Make thee a fiery serpent and set it upon a pole, and it shall come to pass that everyone that is bitten, when he looketh upon it, shall live." Now stop and think about that. Here is an illustration. We find that Jesus used that illustration. Where?
John 3:14.
Yes, John 3:14. He used that as the serpent was lifted up on the pole in the wilderness, so must the Son of Man be lifted up. And so he used that as an illustration. Yes, the type of the Lord being lifted up on the cross. All right, and so here, he says, "I want you to make this brass serpent and put it up on a pole, and everybody that looks at it will live." Gerhard.
Just thinking of it, like it must actually be a scary thing. Like, you're in the wilderness, in your tents and camping, you know, kind of thing, and you know it could be a serpent somewhere ready to bite you and die. It's gotta be I know we just read it and think, "Oh, yeah, it's a serpent," but like, we're not imagining ourselves in that situation, knowing this can be serpent. Could be multiple of them.
Oh, there's lots of them. You can tell that.
Yep.
I mean, lots of people died. Lots of people died here. Yeah, it was a scary thing. I mean, I'm terrified of snakes, and if they were coming out after you, and then God actually sent them after them. All right, and they were deadly snakes. God just created them, sent them off after them, and they started dying.
The camp would have been quite big.
Yes.
You might have to go quite a long way to be able to see the snake.
Well, remember, they were camped around. Remember how they laid out their camp, though? So they had all of them around it. And if you put it on a nice tall pole in the middle, all they had to do is look at that serpent in faith, and God would heal him. Now, doesn't tell us, but there was very likely some grumblers that says, "I'm not looking at any silly snake on a pole." All right, go ahead, die if you want to. But yes, sir.
So is it only the grumblers that died?
The ones that... No, I don't know. He doesn't say who it was, but I'm sure that's the way God usually worked. I mean, that's the actions of God. He didn't just randomly just kill off his people, but it was the complainers. But over the years, everybody had their share of grumbling.
And they were waiting for them all to die, weren't they?
Yes. Yeah, so
every time something like this happens, it sort of
hits. Yep. Yeah, a few more of them die off, so we're getting closer to the promised land. I got a few more. Oh, Grandpa's still here. Oh, a little while yet. But you know, think about that. The comparisons of today. You know, we look for the Lord's return. We're anticipating the Lord's return. And here these people, they were anticipating entering the promised land. But they knew God had promised. All these old folk are going to die before you get there. So they knew, yeah, we got a while yet, it's not there. And he'd already told them 40 years, too. That was another thing. They already knew that it was going to be 40 years. And they're probably counting their clocks, or counting their calendars, you know, looking at, well, how long is it going to be yet? And, oh, another 5 years yet. and that kind of thing. It must have been, that could be discouraging as well. But knowing that you're among those that are going to die before them, and that as the time's getting near, you think, oh boy, I'm going to die before 5 years is up here. You know, so I better be prepared. There's all kinds of things that go through your mind, and the snakes will be part of the scary thing. But then Moses here in verse number 9, he made a serpent of brass and put it on a pole, and it came to pass that the serpent, if the serpent had bitten any man, when he beheld the serpent of brass, he lived. All he had to do is look at it in faith. And you know, that's the way it is with salvation. God hasn't made it hard. Now, it isn't just a matter of taking a peek at something, but in faith, looking to the Lord for salvation, and we can be saved. It isn't that we have to do anything, work for it, or earn it. It's by faith. So, it's a great picture. All right? And then as we work our way down there in verse number 10, they begin traveling again, and the children of Israel set forward and pitched in Obus. And they journeyed from Obus and pitched in this other place. How do you say that name? Ajarabim. I'll just have Joe pronounce it from now on. And in the wilderness, which is before Moab, toward the sun rising. All right, so they're traveling around all these various places. And remember, they're traveling around Edom to get up the other side. Now they're on the east side of Edom, going up that way through the desert, through the valleys, along the sides of the mountain, to get up the eastern side, headed toward Canaan land. And from thence, they moved and pitched in the valley of Zered, and from thence they removed and pitched in the other side of Arnon, which is in the wilderness that cometh out of the coast of the Amorites. All right, now, what was Arnon? Anybody know? Arnon was a river. Okay, if you look at your map, I don't know if you can see it or not. Probably can't see it. It's not clear enough. Yeah. So there's the River Arnon is there, and that's sort of in the middle there near the Dead Sea. Goes across there. So they travel up that direction. So they get up to Arnon. Arnon is the border of Moab between Moab and the Amorites. All right, so Moab was above it. Amorites apparently were below it. Maybe the other way around. No, it had to be that way. Anyway, wherefore, verse 14, it is said in the book of the wars of the Lord that what he did in the Red Sea and in the brook Arnon. Now, this is a significant thing. Made a little note in your notes here. Several commentators that I read believe that there was a significant victorious battle that took place here. The Lord showed himself strong as he had at the Red Sea. Nothing said about it in Scripture, but why else would he make this comparison here and say what he did in the Red Sea and in the brooks of Arnon? So he did marvelous miracles there at the Red Sea. So he did something here at the brooks Arnon. Whether it was an amazing way of helping the people get across this little river, that seems a bit insignificant, it wasn't a big river, or that there was some kind of a battle there that God did, something significant, and that's why in verse 14 he highlights that for us to let us know there was something significant that took place there. Then in verse number 15, and at the stream of the brooks that goeth down to the dwelling of Ar and lieth upon the border of Moab. And from thence they went to Beer, that is in the that is the well whereof the Lord spake unto Moses, gather the people together, and I will give them water. All right, so they get down to this place called Beer, and they.
Can I just say something before?
Yes, sir. Go ahead.
What is the Book of Wars?
Yeah, the same thing. The Book of Wars. That's a book about the wars. I don't know. No, I don't know. And I don't know if it's ever mentioned other than that in the Bible. I the Book of the Wars of the Lord. I don't know if that's ever, that's a good project for somebody to just search that out, see if it's ever mentioned anywhere else. I don't think I've ever seen it anywhere else. So, but that was a good question, Joe. Appreciate that. All right, so now they're traveling along, and now the Lord gives them water. So they run out of water again in this place called Beer. The Lord directed them to dig a well there, and they got water to drink, so the Lord provided for them through that. So now they're over on the far side, on the east side of the Dead Sea. They're waiting to get into the, you know, waiting to cross up into Moab, and then on up further into the, until they cross over Jordan and come across that way. Now, I'm not sure why God sent them in that way, but that's the way God wanted them to go. All right, so they're headed that way. Then, yes, sir. Oh, somebody make it? Okay. Then, verse 17. Then Israel sang this song, "Spring up, O well, sing ye unto it." And the princes digged the well, and the nobles and the people digged it by the directions of the lawgivers with their staves. And from the wilderness they went to Matana, and from Matana they went to Nahalio, and from Nahalio they went to Bamoth. And from Bamoth, in the valley that was in the country of Moab, to the top of Pisgah, which looketh toward Jeshimim. Alright, so Pisgah, the mountain. Alright, very important mountain. That's the mountain where Moses went up and was able to view the land. So they're traveling along this way. They're working their way up that direction. On the far eastern side, going kind of around Moab, on the outside of Moab there. And they've gone up that direction, and they're headed in that way, headed up toward the land of Israel. Okay, and then verse 21, and Israel sent messengers to Sihon, king of the Amorites, saying, "Let me pass through thy land. We will not turn unto the fields or unto the vineyards or drink of thy waters of thy well, but we will go along by the king's highway until we be past thy borders." And Sihon would not suffer Israel to pass through his border. And Sihon gathered all his people together and went out against Israel into the wilderness. And he came to Jahaz and fought against Israel. And Israel smote him with the edge of the sword and possessed his land from Arnon, that's the river, onto Jabbok. That's another river that's up halfway between the top of Dead Sea to the bottom of Galilee. All right, so Jabbok goes across there. Again, you have to look at a bigger map to see that. So this is the land here that belonged to Sihon. And they conquered all that land. And even under the children of Ammon, and the border of the children of Ammon was strong. And Israel, verse 25, took all the cities, and Israel dwelt in all the cities of the Amorites. And in Heshbon, and in all of its villages, for Heshbon was a city of Sihon, king of the Amorites, who had fought against the former king of Moab, and had taken all the land out of his hand, even unto Arnon. All right, so they got all this land now. Verse 27, wherefore they that speak in the proverb say, "Come unto Heshbon, and let the city of Sihon be built and prepared." And there is a fire gone out of Heshbon, a flame from the city of Sihon. It hath consumed Ar and Moab of Moab, and the lords of the high places of Arnon. Woe unto thee, Moab! Thou art undone, a people of Chemosh. That was their god, a people of Chemosh. He hath given his sons that escaped and his daughters into the captivity unto Sihon, king of the Amorites. We have shot at them. Heshbon is perished even unto Dibon. And we have laid them waste even unto Nophah, which reaches unto the Medeba. Okay, so this is all the land of Sihon that they've conquered here. So Sihon was a powerful king. Right, he owned that land north of Moab. So Sihon's area was north of Moab, all the way up to the Jabbok River. So it went across there. So it was a large area. It would be straight east of the Jordan River. Most of the area there east of the Jordan River was what they just have conquered. Okay, and then verse number 31, thus Israel dwelt in the land of the Amorites. And Moses sent to spy out Jahazer, and they took the villages thereof and drove out the Amorites that were there. All right, so they've conquered much of this eastern side. They're headed north, headed up toward Galilee on the eastern side of the Jordan River. And they get to verse 33, and they turned and went up by the way of Bashan. And now Bashan was just north of the Jabbok River now. All right, so Bashan goes on up further. And Og, king of Bashan, went out against them, he and all his people, to battle at Edrei. And the Lord said unto Moses, fear him not, for I have delivered him into thine hand, and all his people, and his land. And thou shalt do to him as thou did to Sihon, king of the Amorites, which dwelt in Heshbon. So they smote him and his sons and all his people until there was none left alive, and they possessed the land. Now this was a significant battle. You'll see again and again throughout Scripture it talks about Og, king of Bashan, and Sihon, king of the Amorites. So these two were great kings, especially Og. Og here was a big man. As you read over in Deuteronomy 3, verses 1 to 11, it tells us that his bed was 4.1 meters long. Now, either he just liked a big bed, or he was a big man, one of the two. That's one big fella. And so you think about that, that's about as long as this rug. You know, that I wouldn't want to meet that guy. He was a fearful king. He was a huge giant. And so he was a powerful king, and they defeated him, and they defeated his people. And so now Israel has possessed all of the eastern side of Jordan, all the way up to the top of Galilee. All right, from the top of Moab, just at the top of the top of the Dead Sea, all the way up to the top of the Sea of Galilee on the eastern side, Israel has possessed it now. They've taken possession of that. So they haven't crossed over. The Promised Land is actually on the east, on the west, but they've taken this side. Okay. Any questions about that?
Tell me if you pulled a kid Og.
I don't know. Short. Easy to remember.
Very short, easy to remember.
Yes, ma'am.
Where exactly was Pisgah?
Pisgah was just on the... you probably can't see it on the map here. No, it isn't inside of Israel. It's outside of Israel. Yes, it's on the other side. It's on the east side of Jordan, just across from the top of the Dead Sea. Right?
So near Jaisa? Or near Jaisa?
I can't see it on that map. It's too blurry. All right, if you look, I got another map here. All right, so I'll just kind of show you. It's near Mount Nebo. All right, so there's the Dead Sea. There's Mount Nebo. So it's just
Heshbon.
Yes, it'd be near Heshbon. Okay. All right, so it's in that region. Because I know that Nebo and Pisgah are very close to each other. We'll see more about that later on when we're studying about Balaam. Balaam went up on Pisgah and was offering his offerings to try to curse Israel, but it was in that same area. Okay. Now, as we think of some applications here, we've already talked about the snake and the picture of Christ and the cross, and a great illustration there. And God's solution for the bitten rebels was to look and live. And that's the solution that God gives us today. You know, and then the big thing is, what effect do you think that the victory over Sihon and Og had on Israel?
Confidence,
yes. Faith in God. Yes. I mean, when we have victories, those are the things that help us to have greater faith in God.
And also the other place we were being scared of.
Yes. Yeah, I mean, you think about it. The other people say, they killed Og. He's gigantic. Whoa. If they can kill him, we're in big trouble.
I'm surprised why they just didn't say, well, look, walk through our land and be nice to them, you know, just walk through. Maybe they were scared they were going to be attacked when they walked through.
Well, I think more of what it was is God wanted them to be defeated.
Yeah.
Wipe them out so they're not going to cause them trouble later on. And so God, and it gave the people confidence. It gave the people God's assurance that he was with them and helping them. And remember, these people, when they started out, they were fighting with staves and stuff. They didn't have many weapons, but they probably got a few weapons along the way. Maybe even got some of the weapons from the Pharaoh's army that washed up on shore, you know, after the Red Sea. They probably got a few weapons there. Maybe collected a few, bought some along the way. Who knows? But now as they defeat people, they would be able to get their weapons as well and give them more ammunition. Okay, any other comments or thoughts?